All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NFL podcast for Tuesday, October 10th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, as many of you all know from having signed up for our free trial to our projection service powered by Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for NFL, for FanDuel and DraftKings, NBA right around the corner, covered under that same subscription blanket. MLB, while the playoffs are still trucking along here, two-game slate going over the next 2 days, so MLB kind of winding down but still available, and then NHL-based projection tools available as well. So go check it out, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that, and that $29.95 is going to be only about one more week of that price because we're going to raise our
price. NBA next week, Doug. NBA coming up October 17th, and I have some announcements there, so We'll keep our current prices up until the beginning of NBA season. We'll probably do like some small promotional deal for the first week or so. And after that, prices are getting jacked up, Doug. It's like the little smiley yellow-faced guy in Walmart, but the opposite. It's going to be like a frowny guy who comes in and makes everything more expensive. So, yeah, if you want to sign up for the projection system, get now while the getting is good.
Well, I mean, heels of that, too. I would say the other thing that got jacked up this weekend were my lineups. So the old sales pitch, The old sales pitch goes into the thing. But I'm just going to do it from a point of honesty because I think there's no reason to be like – sort of touted and not to say when
going. Liar.
Yeah. This weekend was crazy. I would say this was my single worst weekend in DFS, maybe in football ever. Without going back and searching the history, to brick on like 150 millionaire lineups.
Well, you had won a bunch of those tickets, like with baseball or something.
Yeah, right? I come close to like maxing out those most weeks anyway. But this week I just had the full max, and like to brick 150 lineups is pretty damn hard.
You had no caches.
I think I had like two min caches or something like that.
That's
like,
insane.
It was insane. Yeah. And so we're going to talk about why some of those things happened, because I also, it's crazy. I probably had my worst week ever from that point of view, and also walked away from the week still like insanely confident about the projections, because it was one of these situations, and we're going to talk about some of these situations why, but like it was a thing where when I looked back on, you know, the inputs that we had and some of the things that, you know, the assumptions that we made and some of like, I would say like bold calls that we made on a couple different
bold
guys.
Bold calls.
Well, I was saying bold because we came in to cash completely underowned on some of on a couple guys that we, yeah, that we really liked.
Antonio Brown.
Well, yeah, that's a good example. So no one played Antonio Brown. We spoke all week about how I thought that Jacksonville, yeah, we'll just start there. Defense first wide receiver, defensive pass was completely overrated. Their numbers on paper looked great, but it just didn't really hold up when you just did even like the easiest filtering for opponent, right? Like, so like it doesn't take you much, even if you can't like automatically do it like we can. Even just going through and looking at their schedule, you could see that like while they might be good, and I know Jalen Ramsey is a good cover corner, the part where they were like this elite shutdown, crazy awesome defense, just didn't strike true for me. Now, at the same time, you have a tale of two games between the two guys on the same team here. You have Ben Roethlisberger with I could do a whole podcast about this Roethlisberger game, from the interview he did after the game to the game itself. He throws five interceptions, but then Brown, you know, gets 19 targets, converts to 10 for 157, and actually had a 50-yard touchdown called back. So he was very, you know, he was a holding call away from an 11-200. How can you have a game like that and then your quarterback throws five interceptions? Like, it just doesn't – something's not computing for me.
Well, part of that was Roethlisberger running bad. You know, a few of those interceptions were tipped passes. The guy completed 60% of his passes, so it's not like he had one of those, like, old-school Vince Young 12-for-30 games or something like that. This was, like – part of it was bad luck. Part of it was a few egregious forced balls and whatnot. But, overall, the Pittsburgh passing offense, I thought, looked pretty much fine in spite of the five picks. So, you know, a touchdown callback on a holding penalty. I don't know. I think Brown was already a great play. I think he could have been the hands-down play of the week with a little bit more luck. And really encouraging for our purposes is simply the targets. Like, 19 targets is through the roof. He won't have that many going forward throughout the whole season, but we know what the plan is if Pittsburgh falls behind, and that's very useful information.
And that's likely to happen again this week. They play Kansas City, so it's going to be an interesting thing. I don't know. You don't want to hear from your quarterback after the game when he says, maybe I don't have it anymore. He says something like something along the lines of, like, I don't have it, or I'm not good anymore, or maybe I've lost it, or whatever. But not exactly what you want to hear from the guy that you're going to step into the huddle with for the next 11 weeks or whatever, because Yeah, I'm with you that some of those interceptions, one of receiver fell down, one at least one other was a tip. I mean, a couple were bad throws. One he forced just down the field toward the end of the game. Anyway, so that was one thing that helped contribute to some wonkiness. There was, you know, Le'Veon Bell getting buzzed off because of some game script issues. That's what happens. Two pick sixes by Jacksonville will just completely crush the opposing running back every single time because you just automatically flip the game script away from what you need to do usually. And then Bell kind of was able to weather because he's so involved in the passing game as well. So that's the big news. Those are some of the big news from like our lineups. Keenan Allen was another guy that we had a lot of exposure to. He had a ton of targets, 12 targets, only converted 4. A bunch of those were red zone targets. So this isn't going to say I'm complaining about it because this is what happens. I'm fully, on an emotional level, fully fine with this is the kind of thing that happens in DFS. It's just one of those things where...
It's a cost of doing business. I mean, and like if you look at some overall trends, like we talk about in this podcast each week, we talk about trends that have followed from one week to the next. The inconsistency across positions this year is kind of unlike anything since I've really started taking a serious look at, you know, DFS football. So a few things that stood out to me. First of all, of the top 15 wide receivers from last week to this week, so the top 15 overall wide receivers from last week to this week, only Odell Beckham Jr., and he's out for the season. So I don't know like what you're supposed to do with trying to figure out who's going to be good and who's not from week to week. It's a wild sea of uncertainty out there. And I think they're looking at things like targets, looking at things like, you know, team's intentions. That's going to be the way we get an edge going forward because this is a week. Like, I'm sure some people had great weeks or whatever, but basically you were just guessing at wide receiver. Like, the guys that were good, it seemed almost, you know, you could predict AJ Green's a good wide receiver, but was there really a reason to play him over Antonio Brown or, you know, Odell Beckham? I don't know. Like, it was just one of the crazier weeks in terms of flopping from what we've seen so far this season into what we're realizing now.
We've had a great disparity of opportunity. Or not disparity. There's been a great... The opportunity trends are just all the hell over the place, right? Like, so, you know, I wrote up 4 running backs. We're going to be all over the place with this podcast. There's a lot to talk about here. But you know, for running backs last week, I wrote up Bell, Gurley, Hyde, and Powell. And I'm going to focus on those second two guys first. So Carlos Hyde comes into the week. He doesn't – I actually really didn't end up playing too much of him, but just because of the way salaries worked out. But Hyde comes into the week is like sort of you know, Breida had sort of started been chipping into some of his carries and snap counts, but not to an overwhelming degree. And all of a sudden, he just gets out-snapped by Breida. And that was like, oh, maybe he got injured. No, no injury. Just not. Just Breida's the running back now. Yeah.
Okay.
Bilal Powell has sort of the same issue with him. He has a huge volume week the week before. They play a Browns team. He might have gotten dinged up a little bit. He barely touches the ball. Like, it's very difficult to make, like, to know what to make of these situations that on week to week fluctuate. They don't fluctuate by 5 and 10% or 20%. They fluctuate by like 75%. And when that kind of thing happens, you know, even when you get to like the 50% and higher fluctuation points of some of these guys, it makes a very tough sledding to figure out where to go on a week-to-week basis in terms of opportunity.
Well, we're just not, like I said, we're not used to this level of inconsistency industry-wide. Like, I mean, I'll go to running backs in a second, but at the wide receiver position, like, we've always had a class of 5 to 7 halves that you could kind of count on to be in the top 15 or 20 receivers every single week, and oftentimes in the top, like, 2 to 4 wide receivers every single week. And the fact that it's so variable this season means that, basically what it means is that finding safety is trickier. You could still find value, and you can still catch lightning in a bottle, of course, but finding safety on a week-to-week basis is very tricky, and, you know, that makes cash games a lot more erratic than we're used to. Running back wasn't quite as volatile as wide receiver. 3 of the top 10 carried over from one week to the next. But again, only Kareem Hunt carried over from the top 5 from one week into the next. So, like, in terms of just raw yards. So finding safety, like, do we think Aaron Jones is safe now? We got 125 yards on 20 carries. How about Melvin Gordon? You know, topped 100 yards. I think there's a lot going on here that it's going to take a lot of sussing out if anyone's going to make any money for cash games going forward this year.
I still do think from the running back point of view that the top class of guys, and that class I would put as Hunt, Elliott, Bell, and probably Fournette at this point.
I think definitely.
And I would still tend to keep Gurley in this list as well.
How about Ezekiel Elliott?
Hunt, Elliott, Fournette, Bell, and Gurley. Did I say those are the guys I said? Maybe I miss a guy. I think those are my top. Those are the 5 that strike me as those are the guys that I think that the teams are fully committed to. And I know Gurley did not see those kind of touches this week. Some of that, he sort of got game scripted out. Seattle did, was able to just to man up a little bit on the interior to stop the run. Although, again, he missed having a 10-yard touchdown run by an inch because it was a fumble. And it actually was like an 8-point swing because he reaches his ball. Gurley reaches the ball over the goal line. Looks like he gets there. It gets knocked away by Thomas. And now all of a sudden you go from 6 points to minus 2 points for the lost fumble. And now, like, that's an eight, a complete... And besides that, it's an 8-point swing just in the fantasy perspective, and it just flips the game because now they would have been winning early, and they've shown time and time again that they're willing to just lean on him even in close games. Now they come back, Seattle comes back, drives, and now they're losing, and the game just like never kind of got back into his flow. So I would keep Gurley in that top class of guys. After that, this group is completely dartboard material for me, and that's like, and these are the guys that were top the run game this week, like Jay Ajayi, no thanks. Javorius Allen, no thanks, although Baltimore has been running the ball a ton. I mean, what do you think of a guy like Melvin Gordon? We saw his touches trend back up. The Giants team is completely garbage, so maybe that's part of it. But like, would you put Gordon back up into that class or no?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to complain with 6 receptions, 58 receiving yards, 2 touchdowns, and a 100-yard game. I don't think I'm quite ready on Gordon just because we haven't seen the sustained, consistent production on a yards per carry basis. Like, I just feel like he's the type of guy who can go out there and get 22 carries for 51 yards or whatever. So I'm not really ready to give him my full stamp of approval. But yeah, he's on my radar now. In good matchups, I can see playing him. And that's just kind of where we're at with running back. Like, what are my other options on a given week? Like, if Kareem Hunt has a bye, who can I really count on to go out there and get the touches and score the fantasy points? It's real tough.
This week that we're going into is going to be an interesting week for running back as well, because, you know, one thing that we look for a lot on a week-to-week basis in terms of running back safety is teams with high point spreads, preferably at home, though that's not a must, but just basically high point spreads, because typically means the game flow is going to be in their favor. It's a pretty simple concept that most football people understand. You're winning the game, you want to run the ball just to kind of wind the clock down and trying to get out.
Or play more conservatively in general.
Yeah. Exactly. Going into this week, if you look at some of the lines, 1, 2, 3, at least 6 of the games have point spreads of -7 or higher going into the week. That means, that strikes me as a week where we are going to see possibly some running backs maybe creep to the top just because of safety. Some of those are teams that have somewhat, well, they have legitimate guys, like Kareem Hunt is one of those guys. He's a big total. But then the other teams are like Baltimore. So you're like, okay, we're going to have to try to figure out that run game. New England, well, their pass game is their run game, so who knows. Atlanta, Devontae Freeman probably creeps in there. Houston is another one over with Lamar Miller. Uh-huh. Then, like, Washington with Rob Kelly, no thanks. And then Denver with C.J. Anderson, which is going to be an interesting thing to think about because he's had kind of elite touches except for the one week we played him. Yeah, so... it's going to be an interesting week with running back, but I do think that the theme here is inconsistency, and then there's like this one elite class of guy for running back. And would you say the same exists for wide receiver as well, too? Is there like just a top of the mountain in terms of projected targets on a week-to-week basis? I mean, led by Brown, I think. But would you say there's another group hovering around him that you would feel that you feel safe projecting their opportunity on a week-to-week basis?
Well, it's really hard to say. I mean, on one hand, you have guys that are getting a lot of targets but not turning it into a lot of production, like Keenan Allen. I don't really know how I'm supposed to feel about Keenan Allen, given that, yeah, sure, he had the big week in week 4, leading the league with 138 receiving yards. But going back last week, he adds 2 more targets and drops a reception. And this isn't new for him now this season. Like, he's got multiple games with a lower than 50% conversion rate on targets. So I don't know. Like, are 12 targets for him is his true receptions for that 6 or something? I don't know, you know, so I don't mind him. He's a very reasonable price. I'll probably keep playing him with the, like, at least for a little while with the guess that will turn, but it's at least like, I'm at least curious now. Like, I'm at least wondering if Phillip Rivers is still connecting with him in the same way that they were used to. Other target guys, I think AJ Green, you know, has cemented himself as one of the elite guys again. You'll probably have to pay for it because he's a name, but, you know, 189 yards and a touch, 13 targets this week. Been very targeted this season, been excellent all season. I think you could see quite high ownership on him.
He's on a bye this week, just so you know. We didn't go through
who he's on a bye. Sure. All I'm saying, I'm doing the recap from last week. Gotcha. So that's that was my plan for today. After that, though, like, Odell Beckham is now out. a lot of these other guys that have gotten targets have turned it into inconsistent production. I don't know, like DeAndre Hopkins, 12 more targets, 4 receptions. Obviously, he turned 3 of those into touchdowns, but who are the safe guys in your mind beyond like Brown and Green right now?
I would put Hopkins in the group too. I think they're still fully committed to it. I know the conversion rates haven't been there, but they seem to be just completely fine going over. I think Brown is in a class of his own. And then I think that, you know, I'm a huge apologist for when my guys that I like that I thought were going to have good games didn't have good games. Like I'm trending more that way over the course of my DFS career to just like apologize for why the thing didn't happen. You know, Allen saw a lot more Janoris Jenkins than we projected him to. Like I didn't think he was going to draw as much shadow coverage from Jenkins, and he just, you know, I thought he would move him into the slot and Jenkins wouldn't really follow him there. That didn't seem to be the case as I was watching the game. Jenkins was kind of shadowing him. I think the fact that they're still willing to kind of force him the ball, even in like such a negative matchup, strikes me as safe. But again, these guys,
don't we get to a point where there's like 10 or 15 quote unquote good cornerbacks, and all of a sudden just half your games, you're going to be up against somebody who we need to make an excuse for? Like that's kind of how it's felt to me this season. Like, there's enough guys that have this sort of reputation where we can list off a cornerback on fully half the teams in the NFL that we can now excuse a 40-yard performance from our guys. Like, I don't know. It just seems like that's not very practical for future projection purposes.
No, that's a fair point. I think there are a lot of good covers, corners here just in the NFL. That's only something that I've sort of following over like the last 2.5 seasons, to be fair, just because as like more and more data becomes available, it's easier to sort of suss out a bit more than just like Nasi Asamoah is the best ever, you know, and everyone kind of knows it. And there were obviously metrics that pointed to that anyway. But so I don't have like a long history of following the what you would consider to be like elite cover corners, so I don't want to like speak too much about that because it would just be disingenuous. But in general, I think you're probably correct, is that a lot of these guys are just going to draw negative matchups on a week-to-week basis. That's why mostly for the most part I still just want to look at teams that come hell or high water are fine just force feeding those guys the ball. I do. Hopkins is in that group. Mike Evans I think is sort of in that group. Allen definitely. Michael Thomas is right there. Dez is actually the poster boy for that group. He was another one. He dropped a touchdown to start the game, but they were fine targeting him. And then you get tight ends, man. We walked into last week talking about some of these tight ends and just not feeling great about it. You know, we ended up going with Evan Engram. He sees 4 targets, completely blanks with a 0. And then, of course, our boy Jason Witten from the week before, we started, goes out and gets 11 targets. So tight end's another one. I mean, at this point, do you kind of give Zach Ertz, like how much are we willing to just overpay for a guy like Ertz at this point? Because like, Ertz is the, and Kelsey, and even Kelsey has that one bad week, but Ertz and Kelsey, Ertz specifically, like the opportunity is there every week. 8, 5, 8, 5, and 6 receptions over the course of the year, this year, plus 2 touchdowns. Is he the kind of guy that, like, should we just be paying more for him and not rolling, like, not doing this thing where we're like, sit and watch to see if Austin Seferian Jenkins gets there, or if Evan Engram gets there, or if this is the game Jason Witten has a plus match. You know what I mean? Like, should we just be paying, like, this week $7,000 on FanDuel for Ertz and just say, look, it's worth it. We're getting worse points per dollar. He's expensive. But it doesn't appear to be at this point that he's just going to have the 1 for 11 game, you know, and then you're kind of totally dusted.
It doesn't. I mean, he's certainly consistent. There, like, if you want to look at consistency, every single game he's had this season has been between 11 and 15 fantasy points. So from that perspective, it seems like the Eagles have a certain number of plays that are just drawn up to throw to the tight end, and they're just going to get those no matter what. And in fact, you know, it might even grow. Like, we saw 12 targets was his season high last game, 21% target share, which is just kind of insane for a non-Gronk division tight end. And you'd be somewhat unhappy with his performance on 7,000 pretty much every single week, like in a vacuum, right? Like, are we going to sign up for 1.9 points per dollar? That's pretty crappy. I don't know.
You'd be signing up for it, yes, but you're also, with some of these other guys, you're also signing up for like the 0 points per dollar. Like, we've seen enough of tight end performances where, this is what I mean about, at what point do you take the worst points per dollar expectation for like for just the floor, right? Because like some of these other tight ends, they have like 0 point floors, or 0 point basements.
Most of them have 0 point floors.
Sorry, sure, yeah. Basements. And like, so at that point, you know, what are we doing here? And the fact is, you're not you're not typically getting as much savings as you would want to realize to take on some of the risk, I don't think. At least, maybe, look, maybe I'm just like a little gun shy because I'm 2 weeks into like just picking the wrong tight end. And, you know, we had Austin Seferian-Jenkins, we're going back and forth with him and Ingram. And maybe I'm not even bringing this up if like I have more ASJ.
Well, see, the problem, the reason why we've almost never played tight ends in like the 6,700 to 7,500 range, except for Rob Gronkowski, basically, and maybe Jimmy Graham back when he was super good with New Orleans, is because of what happens elsewhere, right? So take this week. You can get Ertz, you know, play Ertz instead of a guy that costs 1,200 less or 1,400 less. Like, so if you go away from Ertz and you go down into the $5,600 range, you get Austin Seferian-Jenkins. Okay, that's a pretty big downgrade. You're never going to get any disagreement from me there, even though Jenkins did have, you know, 10 points or whatever, similar to an average Ertz game last week. But if you go ahead and do the same exercise over at wide receiver, you go from Antonio Brown to T.Y. Hilton, or Antonio Brown to Golden Tate or Brandon Cooks. Like, it's a similar drop-off with arguably just as low a floor if you talk about the total spread of overall points, right? Like, if Antonio Brown's going to go out there and score 25 points in a game and you instead took Golden Tate and he scores 7, that's actually worse than grabbing Ertz and getting his 13 and getting a 0 out of Ingram, you know? So it's like... It turns into a tough math problem, basically, because there's such a gulf between the reasonably decent tight ends, basically Kelce and Ertz at this point, and then this whole other mishmash sea of dudes who come and go as they please and like, sometimes don't even suit up. So it's very hard. It's hard to know without actually pressing the calculate button what kind of math I'm doing, because, I mean, we see this, like when the math that doesn't care about your bad feelings gets involved, it almost always wants you to play a cheaper tight end. And I think it's probably correct, even though it has higher variance and feels sad when it doesn't come together.
And I think you're going to see higher ownership on a couple like guys who kind of came out of nowhere. Ed Dixon had a huge game, 5 for 100. And then you get George Kittle. He turns 9 targets for San Francisco into 7 and 83. Dixon had 5 for 175. I thought that I was looking at his target percentage. He converted all 5. So, these guys sort of, I mean, Dixon was replacing Olsen. I wouldn't say he completely came out of nowhere, but mostly came out of nowhere. And George Kittle completely came out of nowhere. I think you're going to see people maybe talk themselves into it, and I wouldn't blame them because they're still cheap and these guys are coming off big games. But again, the tight end position is long on guys like this. Like these guys that, you know, Tyler Croft last week, 2 weeks ago, has a great game and then kind of completely disappears. Like they're just not their team's first options. They're often not their team's second options. And when you get down that far down the chain in terms of the passing game, you are going to have pretty damn high variance on your performances. And then we've seen that for the tight end. Ertz and Kelce are the two guys who they're probably are the team's second options. Kelce might even be the first option. And then so, because I think he's out targeted Hill. And I believe actually Ertz probably leads the team in targets as well. So they actually just might be their team's first targets. But after that, when you get down, you know, 3 reads or further for a quarterback, you can have games like Evan Ingram had, where he'd had multiple, you know, a couple games with pretty high targets, and then last game he sees 4 targets, 0 yards, he just doesn't basically do anything. And I think that's the same kind of thing you can fall into with guys like Kittle and Dixon as well. So I would just caution that. I'll look more as we get into the cash game.
Well, with Evan Ingram, do you think we go back in that direction, given that Beckham's going to miss this week?
If they were playing anyone but Denver, I would say it. But the thing is, they have such a horrible matchup this week that they have to go into Denver without Beckham, without Brandon Marshall, and I believe without Sterling Shepard, because Shepard's banged up as well. They're just gonna be playing their practice squad. At that point, I would say the team is so bad that I just don't even know what you're getting away with. Like, if I was the Giants, I'd consider sitting Manning. He might get hurt. He doesn't look that good at times anyway. Now they're coming into a game where they have 14 implied points going into Denver. That's as low as you'll ever see in the NFL. I mean, that's like when the Jets play like the Ravens, where the Ravens defense was great or something like that. I'm making those two teams. I'm taking like one bad Jets team from like a great Ravens team or something. But like, you're looking at what could be like a historically bad offense on the Giants side. They have no running game. I don't want to hear anything about Orleans Darkwa. I know he ran in a touchdown. They have no running game already. Now they've lost their 3 best receivers arguably the top two or three best receiver in all of football on Beckham. I wouldn't even play Manning. He's just going to get killed. So that would be the only reason I probably move away from Ingram this week, is I just don't see like what you're getting away with. Sure, they'll have to throw the ball. I think they're just going to be 3 and out like every single time.
I still think he's a reasonable play. They're going to have to throw the ball to someone and they're going to be behind, but
He is more of a receiver. I mean, from like things I've read and taught and heard about from him, he profiles more as a receiver than an actual traditional tight end. So like that is probably the good thing for him. I just worry about the game script situation for them, like to the extreme. Denver's already a great defense with great cover cornerbacks. Like, I don't even think, like, do you think the Denver cover corners right now, and Talib and Harris, are like shadow who? Like Roger Lewis, Tavares King, like whoever they sign off the practice squad. Like, we can take the game off. Like, I think like these guys, like they're going to be able to bring every single guy in the box every single time, because they're just not going to have to double cover a single guy from that offense. So that would be my only concern there. We covered the positions. I guess we didn't really talk about quarterback too much outside of the Big Ben mea culpa on his career. Guys like Deshaun Watson, the touchdown seems unsustainable, though. Are we still comfortable running a guy like him out in cash games just because of the way the team's using him?
Yeah, probably. I think that he's going to have a lot of ownership, so you don't mind that. The rushing stuff, they came down a little bit this week, just 3 carries for 31 yards. He's a high yards per carry rusher when he does take off, and I think that definitely increases his floor. It is tough. Like, if you're going to have to pay the same prices you're going to pay for more established quarterbacks, getting a guy that completed 16 out of 31 passes last week is a kind of a bitter pill to swallow. But I think he's cash. I guess my point is that I think he's cash game viable, but you don't jam him in. He's certainly not matchup proof. So don't get too carried away.
The other guy, the league leader right now in fantasy points from quarterback is Alex Smith. Called it. I think we all saw that one coming from Alex Smith. But he has 116 FanDuel points on the season. He has a 77 completion rate. And he's played some good teams, too. Is he a guy that we want? This is not a guy that we've really considered on a week-to-week basis, simply mostly because it's Alex Smith and they play a pretty conservative offense. So it doesn't sound great to play a guy like him. But if you look at some of his FanDuel pricing, like he's less than Watson this week. He plays against Pittsburgh. He's more than the guys you probably wouldn't consider him. He's less than Brady. He's less than Rodgers. He's less than Cousins. Is Alex Smith a guy that we want to start maybe more seriously consider the safety on him on a given week, simply because of the completion percentage is there and he actually has weapons he can use?
Yeah, Smith is interesting, I think, because I thought all of last year that he was running bad in terms of touchdowns to interceptions. Like, the fact that he was getting out there with a 67% completion rate and ended with 15 touchdowns against 8 interceptions, given the routes he was throwing to, it just seemed like it wasn't going to last forever. And so it's cool to see this season him slide right over and have 11 touchdowns to no interceptions and actually even increasing his already really, really high completion rate. So everything I see from their offense leads me to believe that he could sustain this kind of level of efficiency. I mean, maybe not 77%, but certainly like 70%. That's what he did with San Francisco in 2012. That seems absolutely in play. And if he does, he's going to be an efficient passer. He's got 2 playmakers now, or 3, I guess, with Hunt, Kelsey, and Tyreek Hill. So I think if you're looking for consistency in this completely nuts NFL right now, I think Alex Smith is providing it, and that's probably worth paying for.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting week, I think, we're looking at, because, like I said, there's a lot of big favorites for the run game. There's just some huge totals going in. I'm seeing like 5 or 6 teams at least that have implied totals of right around 25 or much higher. I mean, there's teams like in the 28 to 29 range going into this week. So this after a week of early Sunday football where the 1 o'clock, the 2 o'clock hour was completely brutal from the terms of like things happening. Like, I don't think anything happened. There were just a lot of bad games. We were kind of laughing about it on our game by game breakdown last week, where, I mean, you took a look at some of these games and it was just, I mean, like Cleveland Jets, which I watched way too much of that game, I was pretty convinced that Cleveland was just like actually just openly throwing the game. Like, they'd all bet the Jets line, because they were just making some choices that you just do not make if you're trying to win. Trying to win a game. But this week, it looks to be very much the opposite. A lot of high Vegas totals, some good teams playing some bad defenses. So we probably are going to get a few more fireworks. All right, we're going to be back tomorrow talking about some of our cash game plays for the week, and to spend the day taking a look at those, trying to weed through some of these opportunities and some of the good matchups. And then I think I'll be back on Friday doing a solo game by game breakdown, because you are unavailable this week. So we'll sort something out with the game by game breakdown.
Sometimes your wife just needs to go to Mexico, you know? So when that happens, who steps up to watch the kids? I do, baby. That's called being a real man. So
To be either of our wives. In my next life, I want to come back as one of our wives.
Is that just because you want to make love to me, Doug? Is that what's going on here?
No, No, it's not that. I actually paused too long.
In the future life, I want to come back as your wife, he says.
I want to live
yeah,
the
I
life.
Yeah, I totally get it, dude, 100%.
All right, dfsr.com/NFL gets that free trial, $29.95 a month for a limited time. Then the prices are going to go up. It sounded better when I said it in my head. I meant something completely different, but we're going to move on. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com if you want to type it in the long way. We'll be back again tomorrow with Cash Game Base Plays. Buddy, it's going to be fun being married to you.
Yeah, I can't wait.